of the New York Times. I love to quote the New York Times because I hope they just eat every word they say someday, had an article on the death of George Jackson. It's the only newspaper article I read while I was in Canada. And he comes to the point that the authority, the police authority and the prison authority, is being challenged. And Tom Wicker says, our tendency is to respect authority and to discount people like Mrs. Jackson, who said her son was set up in the prison. And Tom Wicker says, sometimes the black people know that authority is not trusted, it's deeply mistrusted. And he mentions the Orangeburg Massacre or Jackson State and Fred Hampton and other crimes in Kent State where nothing is done. And Tom Wicker, I'm quoting it directly, said, it is also true for once that this predominantly white society ought not passively to accept the opposite and usual assumption that authority is blameless and truthful, and those who defy it are fools or depraved, end quote. Now, when the Warren Report came out, we talked about this about 3 weeks ago, the New York Times, who employs Tom Wicker, is one of their top writers. It was Harrison Salisbury who said that people who questioned authority in 1964 were self-serving, they undermined the United States, they sowed mistrust and confusion at home, they were people without scruple or principle. I've read this on the air before when I mentioned Harrison Salisbury. And he said they were ready to convert the national mood to selfish and particular ends. And in 1964, when I was working or writing to Salisbury or the New York Times and questioning the evidence in the Kennedy assassination, I was not self-serving. I was not undermining the United States. I was not sowing distrust or confusion. I wanted things back and smooth. I wanted no confusion at home. I didn't want these things that are happening. I can predict them on calendars, whether they're going to be 1 week, 3 weeks, 10 years. I said by 1972 we would have the death of black heroes. I thought that Bobby Seale would probably get the death penalty. Angela Davis would be put in for life. I knew, you don't know which ones, but George Jackson's killing of one of the most brilliant minds in America, and he was brilliant. This is the kind of thing that's going to make the black people froth of the mouth prior to the 72 elections. Then we come in with law and order because the country will be unlivable. And it's exactly on my time schedule, Gloria, how they're going to do it. Now, the evidence, the raw evidence in the George Jackson murder has to be put on the table. And Tom Wicker was asking for it. And he says people should go in and get the evidence and find out what is going on. And he says, until this wanton destruction of humanity in the U.S. is seen for what it is, it will go on and consume us. It is consuming us. And I can say, Mr. Tom Wicker, that you are partly responsible for George Jackson's death. You and your New York Times, because we researchers were put down by you so many times for making fun of us. And this is the world that you gave to the United States of America. I only say the New York Times, and I don't single out all the other papers because they don't pretend to be so brilliant. You pretend to be liberal, and you pretend to be brilliant. And maybe I'm sounding too bitter today, but if you guys were on the ball, you don't have to print every rumor that comes out about the Warren Report, but there's a lot of evidence. I haven't seen anything in your New York Times in the last 8 weeks about the lawsuit in Los Angeles and the killing of Robert Kennedy. And if Mr. Evel Younger, who's the head of the justice in the state of California, is named in a lawsuit, how can you find out what happened in San Quentin if he's in charge of law in this state? And it's just that simple. If he's involved in any way, he should be cleared of the conspiracy in killing Robert Kennedy before we let him decide who investigates the killing of George Jackson. He's named in one political murder, and another political person on the same side as Robert Kennedy was killed. A major murder that's going to fraud the people to a very emotional state. And Mr. Evel Younger should be answering that lawsuit and be clearing it before he decides what happens to the lives of people in California. Now, while just the day before I left, Gloria, I got a letter from Bud Fensterwald in Washington, Bernard Fensterwald, and I mentioned his name on the program before. And we have a flyer out that says, get a pencil. So does everyone have a pencil? Committee to Investigate Assassinations, 927 15th Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., area code 20005.
If they don't get this down, I will have it at my desk and they can call at any time during the week, Monday through Friday.
If you don't have a pencil. Okay, Bernard Festerwald. Mr. Festerwald was the man written up in Nation magazine that we quoted a few weeks ago. The irregulars take the field. The first time in the United States that we as private researchers are doing what the government should do. Mr. Festerwald is the chief counsel for the Senate Subcommittee on Administrative Practice and Procedure. I'm giving you a biography, a brief one of him. He was born in Nashville, Tennessee, Harvard graduate, Bachelor of Science, magna cum laude, Harvard Law School. He went to the School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, D.C., Cambridge University, England, postgraduate work. He served in the Navy as a lieutenant, married, four children, legal advisor of the State Department, School of Advanced International Studies, instructor of international law. And I say legal advisor of the Department of State. Remember, it was Evelyn Knight of the State Department who said the State Department is riddled with murders and political murders and assassinations. And we've quoted her on the air before for people who didn't hear it. The head of the State Department, the woman who works hand in glove with J. Edgar Hoover and all the in people, says the State Department is riddled with political assassinations and murders. And it's rotten. Well, I got a letter from Bernard Festerwald asking me my opinion about a certain magazine which came out, and he wanted me to have it. And the name of the magazine is called Sputnik. And it comes from the Soviet Union. And it's published in Moscow. And it's condensed into a small magazine. It's Reader's Digest size. And for the first time in 7 years, the Soviet Union has an article that we've got notice of on the Dallas murder. And they are running a series now on the assassination of John Kennedy. And Bud wrote to me why I should read you his letter. He said, "May, why at this time? You know, like, it's so long coming." And I was complimented because he asked me for advice, and we rapped back and forth. Well, our very first show, when we talked about the Pentagon Papers and later, the name of the game was power and blackmail and holding over the United States. I felt we'd become a second-rate nation, couldn't proceed to wipe out Vietnam because the Soviet Union would blackmail us with what they knew on the power structure of the United States. And it seems that my interpretation of the whole thing coming out now is that if we make overtures to China, they will keep us in line, the power structure, because Nixon came right along and took over the Lyndon Johnson role and John Connally from Texas, and the power structure now is lining up a different way. This morning's newspaper, before I came to the studio, was the Soviet-Chinese border. The tensions have increased on that northern border. And I feel that the Soviet Union, if we're going to get close to China, they will keep us in line by reminding us about what happened. So they're running a series every month, and they're working very slowly. And I want to read you what Sputnik, I'm going to read a little bit each week, and I want to read you what Sputnik is saying in the Soviet Union. It's going around the Soviet Union. It's called New Facts About the Dallas Tragedy. Now, when the Warren Report came out, or before it came out, I guess 2 days after the assassination, this TASS news agency and Izvestia had an article, which I have, saying that they knew Oswald was an agent of the CIA. Well, they kept quiet all these years, so I knew that was a blackmail. So they never mentioned this. And now, this is what the article, the first section, I'm going to read you a few sentences from Sputnik. Because the last few weeks we talked about the plan of the Kennedys to dump Johnson in 64 and to tie him up with the scandal of Bobby Baker, isn't it, out, so they wouldn't have to say, "We don't want you." So this is, I'll just read you what the conflict of Lyndon Johnson with John Kennedy and Sputnik is saying, and it confirms. I just received this article, but we've talked weeks earlier on the program. And this is one of the gratifying things about the work, Lori, is that I have so much piled in. Everything comes in, doesn't scramble what I did before. It only affirms it stronger. So what they were saying, that Johnson, as of January the 20th, 1961, was in a subordinate position to John Kennedy. These are direct quotes from the magazine. The road to began in L.A., and nobody would guess that it was going to end in Dallas. quote, Kennedy demolished Johnson by getting the first ballot. Johnson wanted it very badly, and he got on the first ballot. John Connally, your Secretary of the Treasury now, was Johnson's campaign manager. And when he saw that John Kennedy got the nomination and was about to get it, he was the one who spread the rumor that Kennedy had Addison's disease. Now, when the researchers came out on the killing of Kennedy, it was the far right wing and groups of people from this close Texas circle that said Kennedy had himself killed. I have all the literature, because he was dying anyway and he'd be a hero. He had Addison's disease and he was dying, so he staged this thing so people would remember him. The Soviet Union dates the origin of the Addison's disease to John Connally and says that was foul play. Now, they said, quote, the undercurrent to the determination displayed by LBJ and the Democratic South was to make sure that Johnson was Kennedy's running mate. The man who was writing for the Soviet Union, for TASS, who wrote this article, was in Los Angeles at the time of the convention in 1960. And he said the undercurrent was always there that if Johnson didn't get the nomination, it was a very strong determination that Johnson and the Democratic South would make sure that Kennedy was the running mate, because they said Kennedys were dangerous to the oil industry, for one thing. By 1963, Johnson was absent from almost all the cabinet meetings. And the Sputnik goes on to say that he was conspicuous by his absence. And they also go on to say how in America he was compared to Macbeth. And I think his absence in 63 was not being able to face these people. He didn't go. He was conspicuous by his absence and his people. The rumors began that Kennedy was to drop Johnson. In 1963, the September press blew up the Bobby Baker stories. And the reason they did this was that they weren't any more scandalous than many things in the United States, but they would link Johnson because Johnson was involved. Life magazine, November the 8th, 1963, detailed the story of the scandal. I'm reading, for people who follow the show every week, I'm reading what Sputnik is saying, because this is exactly what we talked about before, the breaking of the time of discrediting Johnson and linking him in with the Bobby Baker scandal. Now, Sputnik goes on October the 4th, 1963, John Connally, the governor of Texas, placed before the White House the subject of the trip of Johnson and Kennedy coming together to Dallas, Texas, coming to Texas. Kennedy didn't want to go. And Sputnik goes on to say that Kennedy said, no, Lyndon, you go on and take care of things in Texas. I'll be there later. John Connally and Lyndon Johnson said to Kennedy, no, you will go to Dallas, Texas. And when Kennedy didn't agree, Lyndon Johnson talked him into it. And the article goes into great length about that. And goes on to say that after that talk, John Kennedy agreed to make the trip. Now, October the 4th seems to be the date they give that Kennedy was persuaded to go to Texas. In volume 2, I'm talking about the commission, hearings before the commission on the assassination of John Kennedy. Now we're going into my research, and I'm going to, you can go to the library and look it up. The 26 volumes are at MPC, or if you know another library in the area that has them. Volume 2, page 34, the testimony of Mrs. Payne, and I have it confirmed in Roy Truly's depository evidence under jobs, cross-filed many times, but here's one page. Oswald got the job at the depository after one call from Mrs. Payne. She called Roy Truly, who managed the book depository on that particular corner, and said, this man's wife is living with me and he needs a job. Can he come down and work for you? Now, Roy Truly is a man quoted in Look magazine as being such a racist, he couldn't stand John Kennedy, and he says, nobody in his building looked out the window except two niggers the day of the assassination. That's Roy Truly, who was hiring Oswald, who was supposed to be getting all this communist literature to Mrs. Payne's home. Roy Truly's mentality was this kind of thing. And Mrs. Payne, I told you, her husband had security clearance. Michael Payne, the husband of the woman who got the job in the depository, went to Harvard University and was a nuclear physicist who designs helicopters at Bell Aerospace. And we've gone into who owns Bell Aerospace and other programs. Michael Payne's father went to Harvard University. His grandfather went to Harvard. They're Eastern Seaboard establishment kind of people, members of that community and the Eastern Seaboard, scientific, intellectual, not the kind that Lee Oswald was supposed to be. And they procured the job at the depository on October the 14th, she called. On October the 15th, Lee Oswald went to see Roy Truly, and he said, yes, you can have the job moving the boxes. Now, they were books that go into the school system in Texas. Lee Oswald was a good photographer. He worked at a radio factory in Minsk. He could have been a translator at the UN or anywhere in Russian. He spoke such fluent Russian. I mean, this is absolutely backed up by everybody. Photographic techniques, electronics, radio work. He settled for a job moving boxes from one window to the other on the sixth floor of a depository on October the 15th, and he started work on October the 16th at the Texas School Book Depository. Now, if you turn to volume 10, page 132, under the Cunningham exhibit at the employment office, on October the 15th, 1963, Lee Oswald went out to the airport in Dallas and got a job as a cargo carrier at the airport in Dallas, Texas. And he started the job on October the 16th. So you see, if the motorcade didn't come in front of the depository, Oswald could have been the decoy at the airport. If they changed the route, and there was a lot of persuasion, the Secret Service wasn't in on the choosing of the route. Lawson of the Secret Service was asked, how did you decide the route? And under sworn testimony, he said, I came late, and in a private club in Dallas, the route of the motorcade was decided. I can bring you the volume page number if people want to look that up. But the route was decided in a private club in Texas. So the book depository was the place where Lee Oswald was on the record for working. But it was never confirmed that he didn't show up at the airport too, or that there wasn't that second Lee Oswald at the airport as a cargo carrier. So this is the kind of thing that the Soviet Union is talking about, the conflict of Bobby Baker and Lyndon Johnson versus John Kennedy. Now, they have a quotation here when Lyndon Johnson had a lot of power in the Congress, and they asked him, as the majority leader of the Senate, why there was talk in Los Angeles, why would you give up that position to become the vice president? And Lyndon Johnson said, the vice president has less power than the majority leader. And Lyndon Johnson said, power is where power goes. And his meaning was clear shortly after John Kennedy became president of the United States. Power is where power goes. There's no position more powerful than the vice president of the United States. Now, to bring the assassination up to date for our lives, there's talk about whether Richard Nixon should dump Spiro Agnew. And he's playing a fatal game. I don't think Richard Nixon will ever hear these tapes because the Secret Service encases him in layers and layers and layers, and he will never hear what's happening. But that is a fatal game. That dumping Agnew is like dumping Lyndon. And it's a very tricky game. And they're talking about running John Connally as the vice president under Richard Nixon. And I do hope, whether you're listening, what party you're in, Republican or Democrat, whatever you're doing, wherever you belong or believe in, I do not think a man like John Connally should even be suggested for the nomination of a vice president. It shouldn't be suggested until all the evidence on the killing of John Kennedy is on the table. He shouldn't be suggested because he sat in the car and got a bullet shot and said under oath, privately, publicly, that a different bullet hit him than John Kennedy. That Connally said, my God, I've been hit, which he couldn't say if it went through the vocal cord, and he turned around, and after he heard him turn around, there was a time lapse and John Connally was hit. And if this was true, there isn't a person, including the Warren Commission, that would say if they were separate bullets, that Oswald couldn't do it alone. He couldn't get that many bullets out. So I think that if you're writing to public officials, you should certainly mention John Connally, if you're a Republican or Democrat, that there is talk in the news about running John Connally as the vice president. And don't wait till the convention in San Diego. It's too late. You have a year or 6 months or 9 months. It's too late then. Now is the time. This is why we're wrapping, Lori. Right. This is the time to say, when Jim Harrison had his suit going in New Orleans and wanted a very important witness, Sarja Acacia Smith, who was involved with David Ferry and with the people that he thought were involved with the conspiracy, Smith went to Texas, and John Connally wouldn't extradite him. He was the governor of Texas. And John Connally was the secretary of the Navy, and a researcher that I know is doing work on Lee Harvey Oswald's relationship to John Connally. And I ask, you know, this is a very important thing, that your public officials, not, it's hard to impeach them or remove them or try them, because then we look disgraced. But we do, we mentioned this, remember before, that when you choose the vice president, the president just picks him, and nobody does research. If you wanted Carswell or Hainsworth on the Supreme Court, everybody got busy and looked into their past judgments on the bench, their financing, who put them in, what country clubs they belong, are they racist, what was their legal opinion in certain cases. Why can't we, for 8 months, find out what John Connally was doing in Texas? Where was John Connally's evidence that John Kennedy had Addison's disease? Come tell us where it was. If you smear, should you be a vice president? There are 100 reasons why John Connally shouldn't be Secretary of the Treasury. And he's handling your money, and he's handling the most important thing in the United States that affects all of your lives. Whether you have revolutions, bloody or quiet, or whether you have effective changes, it's all tied up with this money thing. And political assassinations are not. Didn't somebody ask you how long about these assassinations? Why do they keep going on, or how much can you talk about them?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think you talk about them because the people who seem to be involved are moving up into more powerful positions than they had in the beginning. And the country isn't getting any better. More guards at San Quentin isn't going to stop killings. It's not going to stop revolutions. If you have 100 guards and 2 oppressed people, you will someday be invaded by China or Russia or Africa to free those 2 oppressed people. You can't continue. There are not enough guards in the world to work it out that way. So that these men that are going to run for office, of all people in Washington, you know, who moved up, John Connally is not a Republican. Richard Nixon was elected as a Republican. And you Republicans then get a Democrat who switched over working. And it's very important to write letters. Word your own thing. I've mentioned 5 or 6 things about John Connally, and write to anybody about them. Maybe the president.
Right, especially. Yeah. Now, we have about 5 minutes, May, before the end of the program.
Yeah.
You wanted to stress again about them starting to write letters again after the 15th of
That's
September.
Right.
And you want to go through the books?
Well, I thought
again, or?
I've mentioned several books to you. I would like the local people, the book stores, maybe at one time there was a whole display of just assassination books, then that went out of style, and they put them away, and it has to be a big issue, and it's going to build up. Maybe they could put them in one section where people could see what's coming out. So each week I'm going to give 4 books. I was going to have a bibliography list made up and leave it at the libraries, but I'm swamped with that reading material. So right now I'll give you the name of publishers of 4 places now, in addition to the frame-up that we mentioned. And you can write, if you miss the first one, get your pencil and write the other 3 and then call back for the other one. I mentioned frame up. You could write that committee to investigate assassinations that I gave you. We're not soliciting money. Every research in the country is broke. If you want to send Bud $10 as a friend, you'll get a newsletter on current assassination information. You get your money's worth. It may save your life someday if you take it seriously, but we're not asking. You can just write and ask for the newsletter from Committee to Investigate Assassination. I've mentioned Heritage of Stone, Jim Garrison's book. It's put out by B.P. Putnam. Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment. The publisher is Holt, Reinhardt, and Winston. It's $6. Heritage of Stone is $6.95. Then Sylvia Mayer did a very fine book, M-E-A-G-H-E-R, Accessories After the Fact. publisher Bob's Merrill. The book was $8.50. I think if you bought Frame Up and Heritage of Stone, Rush to Judgment, and Accessories After the Fact, I add up, it would be $31. And if I know some people, that's a lot of money. But eventually, if you put those four in your library, you would know a thing about history as it's happening. You pay that much to read Lindbergh's diary or Lady Bird's diary, or you buy other books on Amelia Earhart or Pearl Harbor or General Stilwell, you're way back then, and that's over, and you are leading a life now that can affect changes. So instead of reading all these historical novels, read the current. You can read everything, but that was then, and this is now, and everything, every gun that goes off, every cop that was killed, like the one in San Francisco, is the consequence. Some people think I am too conspiratorially minded in that I link so much of this together, but when your authority, when your attorney generals, your Supreme Court justices break down law and order, what is the bottom layer of the social ladder going to do? They can't respect authority. They've never seen it. They've been shot in the back by it. They've been hung up by trees, in the trees by it. And to understand that the authority have lied in the evidence, hardcore evidence of the political murders in this country, you may have more sympathy with what the minorities are trying to tell you and stave off problems. So this $31, if you bought those four books, you would have something to show your children or your grandchildren about their time. And we've talked about bridging the generation gap. You would have something to rap about that at least you may not even agree with it, but you try to understand. Somebody and a lot of people are doing work like me. And don't fight us. Don't agree with me. Don't disagree. But get any one of these and get another. And most of these books have footnotes. And they're fascinating. And so I would like to see, and then there is another truth letter that I mentioned. This name is hard to spell. His name is Joe, J-O, and the second name is J-O-E-S-T-E-N. And I'll give you his New York address so you don't have to send over to Germany, 8770 173rd Street, Jamaica. The zone is 11432, New York City. Joe Steen has written 8 or 10 books on the assassinations. He has a newsletter every month, a page on the Chappaquiddick accident, Robert Kennedy, and John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Sirhan. And it keeps you up each month on the developments, and it's informative.
Thank you again, May. What about, do you have any ideas for next week, or should we just wait until we get there?
This is an exercise of frustration. I could go every day, an hour a day.
Thank you.
Okay.
May Bressel.
Listening to Dialogue.